Are you ready to start living richer? Well, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Live Richer podcast, hosted by Jamie Catmull, a podcast created for people to challenge and manage their ideas of wealth, culture, and money across the world, bringing you the best personal finance advice to make more, save more, and live richer. Now, here's your host, Jamie Catmull.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Live Richer podcast. I'm so excited to have the expert we have today. She's been on Oprah, Dr. Phil, you name it, she's been on it. She's been out there teaching people how to get out of debt and how to bounce back. She's a best-selling author, she's a mother, she's an investor. Her name is Lynette Halfani Cox, and I am so excited to have her here today. Lynette, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jamie, for having me. I was looking forward to this conversation.
I have been waiting. You know, I personally have needing some help when it comes to bouncing back. My husband, I didn't even tell you this when we talked last, was sick for the last year. And we had all this medical debt and credit card debt. Things have been really piling up. And it made me really think about how hard it is for people when you have something you're not ready for happens financially.
You know, one of the crazy things is that when I was researching bounce back, I found statistics from the Pew Research Organization in Washington, D.C. that said about 2/3 to as many as 80% of Americans experience some kind of a financial setback all the time, like every single year. So sorry to hear about your husband's medical issues, which are frankly very, very common in terms of people having health-related setbacks. And we know that, you know, medical bills are one of the top things that drive people into bankruptcy. So we all need to be talking about ways in which we can build our resilience and have a way to plan for not only the unexpected, but in sometimes the things that are going to come along that are quite common, that are perennial challenges that folks deal with on a routine basis.
So what is your advice for people? I know you personally were able to get out of what, six-figure debt?
Yeah.
Within 3 years when you first started out? I mean, that's how you started the big book. Your first book, was it Zero Debt?
Uh-huh.
Was that the first one?
Zero Debt was actually, believe it or not, my second book. Everybody knows that book because it's a New York Times bestseller and it's done so well. We've put it in, you know, multiple editions have come out over the years. But my first book was actually a book called Investing Success, where I talked about mistakes that investors make and how to overcome those and how to, you know, recover from those. And you know, over the years now, a bounce back is book number 16. You know, right after I wrote Investing Success, really when I was in the middle of just sort of, you know, finishing it up, that's when I met my husband, Earl. And, you know, I won't go into, you know, TMI, you know, on all this, but Earl had been in the book publishing world. And his former employer, John Wiley and Sons, he had left that company. He was a national sales account manager there and had headed up their African-American books division. And Wiley was the company that made me an offer for Investing Success, my very first book. And I accepted. And I said, yep, I'm going to do this deal with you. Well, I ended up getting downsized from my job. I was a Wall Street Journal reporter for CNBC at the time. So Dow Jones was the parent company of the Wall Street Journal, and they were my employer. I got fired along with 200 other people, wasn't expected. And when that happened, I decided, instead of taking that book offer, I decided to tell them, no, I'm not going to accept your book offer. I know I said yes, but I'm changing my mind here. And that I was going to self-publish Investing Success. So I go to a book conference. I wind up meeting Earl on the airplane coming back. and he tells me, he says, you know what? I see you've written this great book about investing. You know, he said, but everybody has debt. He's like, you should write a book about debt, about getting out of debt. That'll be a New York Times bestseller. And in my mind, this was the very first conversation we had. And then in my head, I was thinking, oh my God, if this man only knew, you know, because I was in the middle of paying off to my $100,000 in credit card debt. Oof. And so, yes, later that, you know, several months later, I wound up writing zero debt. And it literally only took me 60 days to bang out this book because I lived it. It just poured out of me. And yes, that book did become a New York Times bestseller. And it wasn't just, honestly, though, Jamie, the credit card debt that I had. You know, in my younger years, even prior to that, I had been a hot mess financially, if I'm honest about it. I had bad credit. Certainly when I was in college, before I had my car repossessed, I did so many, you know, mistakes financially. I got out of grad school at USC. I got my master's degree in journalism and I had $40,000 in student loan debt. So I had, you know, problems upon problems, you know, debt upon debt. And yes, for the credit card debt, it took me 3 years to pay that all off. I never missed a single payment. And then when I wrote Zero Debt, as I mentioned, it became a New York Times bestseller. But it took me a decade to pay off my student loan debt. And because I made a lot of, again, errors in terms of how I was managing that debt and what I was doing. But suffice to say, I've lived through, you know, personal debts, medical issues, just a whole litany of them. And so part of that, I try to channel and bounce back and share stories, honestly, not just about my own, you know, sort of comeback, but the stories of everyday other real life people who have overcome different setbacks and adversity and you know, live to go on and thrive.
So, Lynette, you said you have all these stories. What is one of your more inspirational favorite stories? And can you share it?
Sure. Well, Bounce Back is complete with a lot of rich and very memorable stories. I think memorable for me as I was interviewing people, and I hope memorable to readers. I'm struggling to say a favorite. So if you indulge me, let me just say two of my favorites. One is about Christopher Powell, who is a quadriplegic and was dealing with and continues to deal with a disability. And another one is Dawn Kelly, who was downsized. Now, your audience should know that in Bounce Back, I talk about these 10 different dreaded Ds, as I call them. They all start with the letter D and they all feel dreadful when you're going through it. So it's downsizing, divorce, death of a loved one, disability, disease, debt, damaged credit, disasters like natural disasters, dollar deficits, which basically means I have no cash flow and I feel kind of broke and I'm living paycheck to paycheck, and then discrimination. So again, in all of these chapters, I tell different stories, and I personally have been through 9 of those 10 dreaded Ds. But Christopher Powell is beyond inspirational and an incredible tale of resilience and bouncing back. This is a person who was wheelchair bound for the first 2 decades of his life. His mom, his grandmother, and aunt, they all took care of him. And because of his medical condition, he was not able to use his arms or legs or anything. However, as he became a young man, he was incredibly smart at all points of his life, in childhood, elementary, you know, into high school, and a high school teacher recognized his math aptitude, wanted to encourage him. He did so. He put him in regular, quote unquote, classes with regular kids, not with other kids who had disabilities. Of course, Christopher thrived, you know, top pupil, et cetera. And then they were like, you should go to college. And he was like, what? Like me to be able to go to college, you know, to live on his own or to even think about the prospect of living on his own started to motivate him, right? And so long story short, this man taught himself to walk. He taught himself to run. He ran races. He would fall down, you know, repeatedly. His college roommates would pick him up. But now he is in his 40s, I believe, right now. He lives independently on his own, despite his condition. He became a homeowner. He heads a math department at a college in Maryland. And again, he's one of those indomitable spirits that just refuses to kind of give up despite physical limitations. And everything is very much a chore. Just he said, listen, it's incredibly hard for me to just go from the living room to get to the kitchen, to get something out of the kitchen. But he always focuses, as he told me, his strategy was, I'm always going to concentrate on what I can do, not what I can't do. He said, if I could use my mouth, if I could use my fingers or my elbow or my, I always channeled a way to just to figure it out and to look on the bright side and to manage his expectations. So I said, those are some huge expectations, to be able to teach yourself how to walk and run. But it's just a tremendous inspiration. So that's definitely one of my favorite stories from Bounce Back. I mentioned Dawn Kelly also. Phenomenal story of bouncing back after being downsized from a job. Dawn was a communications professional, a PR maven, really. She worked for a financial services company. And she was a high level vice president, I believe was her title. She was making over $300,000 a year. She had won awards. She was really at the top of her game. One day, unexpectedly, she got called to that level of the company's, management level, the fourth floor, I believe it was. And she knew what that meant. Like, oh, my goodness. And sure enough, she got the axe. She got a pink slip. She was fired.
Yeah.
It devastated her. She, couldn't get out the bed. She was crying, depressed. She thought, why me? And frankly, a lot of us, because I've been through a downsizing too, one time in my life, you have a pity party at first. You're like, why me? I was great. I was performing. It wasn't, So Dawn struggled, immensely, emotionally, et cetera. And then one day her daughter, came into the room, her young adult daughter, and said, I need to talk to you. I need you to tell me if you can find my mother, because I don't know who this woman is laying in the bed. This is not my mother. My mother is a fighter. My mother refuses to give up. My mother would not let some job be the end all be all for her. And so when you find my mother, please let me know, And so Dawn was like, she told me that was like it just like shook her, it was like a wake up call.
Oh, yeah.
So here's what she ended up doing. She said, I'm going to take some time and process this and really think about what I really and truly want. What do I want to do? And for her, she wanted to become an entrepreneur. She wanted to open in Queens, New York, which is where she lives, a fresh food and beverage retail store. And there's nothing like this there. It was, it's fast food, it's pizza, it's just, barbecue, it's, a whole bunch of stuff. But she was focused on healthy things like smoothies and salads and fresh fruit drinks, etc. People told her she was crazy. People told her, this is not going to work. You have no business experience. You don't have entrepreneur, nothing. She started learning. She took a, she went through Goldman Sachs, their program for small business owners. She read up everything she could. And she was like, I'm not going to let a lack of knowledge stop me. I'm going to start learning. And she did. 2 years to the day after she was downsized, she was having her grand opening for her establishment, which is called the Nourish Spot. And her friends who were, there, everybody was there for the ribbon cutting ceremony. They were like, come out, come on, Dawn, let's get going. And she was like, okay, she was doing the last minute preparations.
Yeah.
And she just looked at the calendar and she looked on her, I can't remember if she looked at her watch, but she realized, oh my gosh, look at the date. And it was literally 2 years to the date to when he had gotten fired. And she was like, look at God. Okay, this is great, you know? So her business has been thriving like crazy. Just last month, she opened a new store in Brooklyn, an additional location. She's out at Citi Field. She's just doing amazing things. So I say all of that to show people that when it's the worst of things that you might expect, and I've been through some of the worst, including the loss of a sister when my sister Debbie died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. One of the things that I try to tell people is that when sudden change happens to you like that, the loss of a loved one just totally out of the blue, a downsizing, that change is traumatic, of course. But after the change that's external that happens to you, something internal called transition happens to you as well. And every transition is an opportunity for a new beginning. As painful as it might be, it gives you an opportunity to grow, to learn, to thrive, to exist in the world in a different way. And sometimes there's beauty in that as well.
Oh, yeah, there's beauty in it. But it sure doesn't feel like it when you're in it.
No, you know? No, no. Believe me, I know.
I mean, how did you come out? I mean, here you were in debt, you're writing and you're doing all this stuff. How did you start paying off that debt? And what do you tell people that come to you that maybe they got downsized and they got depressed and they stopped paying their bills and now they're even in a worse scenario than they were a year ago? And they're like, I don't know what to do. I have all this backpack full of stuff. I don't feel I can get my way out. I can hardly get by. How can I pay bills?
Right.
So what do you tell someone? How do they start? How do they get out of this mess?
Well, believe it or not, one of the things that I share most and that I emphasized in Bounce Back is that you have to take care of the mental and emotional stuff first and then tend to the financial stuff. It's very counterintuitive for people because when they have a problem like, oh, I lost my job, the first thought is, oh my God, how am I going to replace my income? Or I need a new job.
Oh, yeah.
I need another gig. I have to get some money in here. And really, that's actually the wrong approach for a whole host of reasons. One is that research shows that 80% of all financial decision making is emotional. This is a Nobel Prize winning economist, Daniel Kahneman, showed this through his research. And so for somebody like me, who I'm a research, you know, junkie, I'm a research queen, as I call myself. What I take from that is it's really about the personal and personal finances. You know, it's really about the dealing with the human side of money and tending to that so that you're enabled or equipped to make better financial choices. Because if you're not in your right state of mind, right, and you're out there, let's say, interviewing for a job, or maybe you went through a divorce and you're still extremely bitter or upset about that divorce, what do you think you're going to look like in the job market or in the dating pool, right? You're not going to be presenting your best self because you haven't tended to those parts that need healing. And so one of the things that I emphasize in Bounce Back, the first couple of chapters in the book actually deal with the emotional side of money. It's about building your physical resilience, your emotional well-being, about self-care, about having connections in your life, having the right people in your space and in your social and professional circles that will allow you greater capacity to bounce back or recover from adversity. So again, my first piece of advice to people in a nutshell is, let's put the money stuff to the side. Let's first deal with, how are you doing personally? What do you need? What kind of support do you need to help you to get through this? Because you'd be surprised. A lot of people have not been able to process or talk about or deal with the shock that they got, whatever the thing was. Again, if it was a natural disaster, I happen to live in the greater Houston area. right now. And you might remember Hurricane Harvey. Think about all the people who lost their homes here in Houston. But it's not just here. We have, you know, so many climate events happening all around the country and, of course, and around the globe. Wildfires, earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, all manners of disasters, flooding, et cetera, right? And when you have something like a disaster that whips up, you know, quickly or just comes out of the blue and you lose everything, how do you come back from that? The step isn't to say, of course, you need to have, you know, a roof over your head and, you know, you need food. I'm not talking about those not having the basics, you know, but really it's that you need to first start tending to that person's trauma and their emotional needs. And then they can you can better help them to be equipped to make the right financial choices. Otherwise, it's kind of like. Which what is the expression? The horse before
cart
the
before the horse,
the cart before the horse. Thank you.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, maybe because you'll fall into those same traps. You may do good for a couple of days. It's like the diet, right? You might do good for a week, but then you're like, I'm going back.
Just
you know, I think that can sometimes. Right. And I think when you're sat, when you're depressed, the last thing you want to do is not be able to do the things you want to do because you don't have money. Right. Or you've lost things. It's really hard. It feels almost like you're punishing yourself.
Right.
You know, and I'm already sad. Right. And then now I have to tell people, sorry, I can't go to dinner or I can't do this. I can't do the vacation. I'm trying to pay off my debts. And that even comes with more shame. I think it's very psychologically difficult for people to escape debt for that reason.
For sure. One of the people that I interviewed as experts for Bounce Back was Dr. Asia Evans, who is a financial therapist. She talked a lot about the shame factor and why it is and how it is that we carry a lot of that emotional burden for our financial choices, the quote unquote mistakes we feel that we've made, and how you can kind of readily address some of those things. And one is first to recognize it, to recognize the language that we're using and to, you know, be mindful. And as a friend of mine, Sandra Davis, who is also a master coach, who I also interviewed for the book, talks about self-care and compassion. She was saying that it's often easier for us to have compassion for somebody else. And that the way in which many people can first experience self-compassion is externally by being kind and nice to others. It's nothing for us to tell a friend in need, right? To say something like, oh, I'm so sorry you're going through this tough time. How can I help you? What can I do to be supportive? That kind of thing. And even if the friend made a mistake, we're not going to berate the friend. We're not going to wag our fingers and say, oh my God, you were such a bonehead. Why would you do that? So if you wouldn't say that to a friend, why would you say that to yourself, right? So the idea is, as Sandra says, is, you know, first practicing compassion, you know, to others and empathy, that modeling is like you're modeling it for yourself. And so I even do it. I catch myself sometimes if I'm overly harsh or overly critical with myself in different areas, I'll catch myself mentally and say, oh, that was a little harsh, Lynette, you know, and to say, speak to yourself kindly. You know, as if you would to a friend, you know?
Yeah.
And so, again,
like
these might seem like soft things. It might be like, oh my God, this isn't a personal finance book. This isn't a money book. But yes.
I know. I'm like, is this a self-help book? Are you sure this is a money book?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I've had people, you know, say that they connected and resonated with that and with the workbook, because I should mention, while I'm getting my plug in here, you know, for the book, obviously the flagship book is Bounce Back, The Ultimate Guide to Financial Resilience. But there is a companion book called The Bounce Back Workbook, where people actually work through these things that we're talking about. So you were asking the question about what do you do? You process it. You sit with it for a while. And it's hard. I mean, the honest answer is that some of these traumas and experiences that people have had require them to think, to reflect, to write about it, to sit with it for a little bit, you know, to go through these phases of, you know, different transitions. because, again, the first part is like the shock phase where you're like, is this really happening to me? There may be some denial. Yeah. You might get angry about it. Let's say if it was a job. One of the things that I have people to work through in the Bounce Back Workbook is to inventory the things that they actually liked about their old job, the things that they didn't like, the things that were actually perhaps negative or harmful for them. And some people might identify, yeah, even though I was paid well, but you know what? I really didn't like my coworkers, or I didn't like the hours, or my boss was, you know, kind of a jerk, you know, or I never got to work on these projects that they promised me I would, whatever the thing is, right? And then you sort of pivot to what would I like in the next job? What am I really looking for? What are my must-haves? And then you can direct your job search accordingly. Again, after you sort of sit with some of this and think through these, one of the strategies is to very sharply identify the things that are just like non-starters for you. The things that you say, nope, I'm not going to jump right back into the exact same type of job. Because really, if I'm honest about it, did I really like that? You know, so for somebody like me, I was working in television. As I mentioned, I was a Wall Street Journal reporter for CNBC. So I was on air every day. And when I got downsized, I only needed one layoff in my life to say, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want my freedom and I'm just going to go for it. Right. But what I did do this just, you know, there was no methodology at the time, you know, 20 years ago when I got laid off. It wasn't prescribed or anything like that. But now in retrospect, I see that I actually followed a lot of the advice that experts have told me to do. So one of the things that I did was to really be to get really clear about what I liked about my old job and what I didn't like. So I liked the fact that I was on TV all the time, that I had the ability to write still, that I could explain to an audience complex subjects in very simple terms. I still wanted to be able to do both broadcast and print, but I also wanted my freedom. I also wanted higher pay, and I wanted things more on my terms. All of that led me to entrepreneurship. I had an opportunity to, you know, go to CNN and do some other stuff, but I was like, nope, I'm gonna go for it. I'm going to take the entrepreneurial path. Well, in the Bounce Back Workbook, I show people through exercises, fill in the blanks, quizzes that they take, self-assessments, and analytical exercises that let people do their own bit of self-reflection on divorce that they've gone through, downsizing that they've been through, things that they probably never would have processed on their own, or perhaps maybe never even spoken about to anybody. And so it's really, it's kind of like a cathartic, you know, therapeutic process. And
I think writing things down is always good.
Yeah.
You know, to get it down there and just out of your head and onto paper. People always say that when you write it, it becomes real, like even your goals, and you're more likely to do them. I can see why a workbook would be so helpful.
You have these epiphanies.
Yeah, you have them. And so after you get to the part where you know what you want to do mentally, like, okay, I've done this part, then what do you do?
The next step is really about strategy. So it's about what is the best path forward given my goals. And so obviously it's very much dependent on what setback you're trying to overcome. So for example, the person who has lost a job, who is now mentally prepared and has processed their losses and the disappointment that they felt, et cetera. Now that they're prepared to re-enter the workforce, now it's about a lot of assessment from the outside. So obviously you'll do things like, you know, shoring up that resume, having job coaching, maybe even having a professional coach, asking professionals who are in your field, like how they perceive you or, you know, the things that they think you might need to shore up. Networking. I mean, a huge part of bouncing back from any setback is about the connections in your life. So one of the strategies that I talk about is connections. So, you know, we live in this very individualistic, you know, society that's like, I'm a self-made person. And, you know, I did it. I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. And, you know, that kind of mindset often.
You hear it all the time.
You hear it like it pervades, you know, it's, a,
it's
in a lot
like
of
like constantly,
thinking.
You know, people are saying that, you know, but, you know, there's always someone there that helped you. Just what? Like the first person you mentioned. He had a teacher who believed in him, right?
Exactly. Christopher Powell did. That's right.
Yeah. So, and then the one was the daughter who came in and she said, Mom, wake up. Where's my mother? There's somebody a lot of the times within that network that helps you.
Yep.
In those times of disaster.
And the thing about being able to shift when you get to that next phase and ready to pivot, it's often a person that is going to help you to do that shift. So there was an organizational psychologist named Dan Hardy. He wrote a book called Who, Not How. He wrote it with a guy named Dan Sullivan, who's an executive coach. I quoted Dan's Ben Hardy's work in Bounce Back, because one of the core message that they're saying is that for anything you want to get done, especially if you want to level up, if you want to like 10x your life, go bigger, if you want to make something happen, it's often the person. We so often focus on, how am I going to get this done? Like, okay, if I want to achieve something, if I want to earn a six-figure salary, if I want to get this, stop worrying about the how, worry about the who. And so that resonated also with me, certainly in terms of writing Bounce Back and sharing the methodology with people for having the ability to bounce back. If you have the people in your life, it makes everything so much easier. Whether that's a professional connection who can make a referral for you, who can put your resume to the top of the stack and when you're job hunting, or who can simply have coffee and chat with you about what's going on in the industry and help you to kind of keep your skills in dialogue fresh, or whether that's having the right people in your life from a professional standpoint. If you're in debt, or if you have damaged credit, or if you have dollar deficits, all of those folks who are facing those financial challenges, people that they need in their life often are professionals of some kind. It might be a budget counselor. It might be a financial planner. It might be an accountant. People who have tax problems, you know, they might need to have a CPA. So again, part of your strategy for bouncing back is having connection. And also, here's the next step, Jamie, because it's not good enough to just have the connection. The next step is to leverage the connections and ask for help.
Okay, a lot of people don't do that.
I cannot tell
you. They think they're putting people out. I'm putting them out. I shouldn't put them in a situation where they feel like they're obligated to help me. They don't want to help me. You know, they're busy. People are very afraid to go ask other people for help. I know I have been. Like, and then sometimes there's even shame in asking to help because you feel like it makes you look weak or you're embarrassed.
Exactly. And I literally did this with Bounce Back for myself. I said, oh my gosh, Lynette, I had to recognize what I was doing. I have a phenomenal network, family, friends, professional colleagues, peers. When it was time to, you know, go into promo mode, I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do here to, you know, put the word out more? And again, Sandra was one of the people who said to me, Sandra Davis said, ask everybody that, you know, she was like, Lynette, you've spent 20 years giving. You're constantly mentoring people. You pour into so many younger people who have come after you. You're always helping somebody else. So now you put a lot of deposits in this bank account. And now it's okay to ask. And I was like, she's so right. But I even resisted, even though I have a phenomenal network. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask everybody, my media friends. It's a request. Hey, would love to come on and talk about my book. My friends who have the capacity to buy, which is all of them, really. Hey, can you buy my book? You know, just what is it that you need? But even for somebody like me who was writing the advice, again, I'm just telling you the human real side of this. It's not enough to have, in other words, those connections. then you have to take it one step further. You have to get over whatever the thing is that prevents you from asking for help. And Jamie, you identified a lot of it. Sometimes it's shame, embarrassment. Sometimes it's pride. Sometimes it's not wanting to, quote unquote, inconvenience or put somebody else out. But really, at the end of the day, we're all social creatures. People actually love to help when they feel like it's something, it's value that they're giving, right? And when they feel like it's not you constantly coming to the well, or, you know, it's a different story. If somebody is constantly asking, that's a whole different thing, right? But no, if you are in need for something, whatever it might be, again, you know, the chapter that I wrote about natural disasters, I talked about all these organizations from Team Rubicon to the Red Cross, Habitat for Humanity, and others that literally their reason for being is to help people to recover from natural disasters and setbacks. And then they refer you to others. If you go ask for the help, they'll tell you more resources than you can get. But the key is you have to, you know, open your mouth and speak up. They say, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And they say a closed mouth doesn't get fed. So I tell people, don't suffer in silence. Ask for help.
And that's really, really good advice. Now, I always ask all of my guests, what does living richer mean to you? As a woman who's been lived through it all, what does that those words mean when you hear them, live richer?
Living richer for me is really about three things at this point in my life. One is absolutely great health. I truly believe that health is wealth. And so everything that I can do to maximize my physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being and promote my health overall, I feel that's priceless. Two is my family relationships. Increasingly, again, especially at this point in my life, and I'm a Gen Xer, I value my social connections far more than I value the dollars. So for me, it's about having the right people in my life that support and sustain me and that I can be supportive to as well. And then third, the biggest thing that I want to become is a time billionaire. So my time is of the utmost importance to me. I love having a high degree of financial freedom. I don't have 100% of the financial freedom that I'm still, you know, on the path towards and aspiring to attain right now. But when I'm at what we call work optional status, which is some people call it retirement, et cetera, I'm certainly going to be looking to more readily leverage my time. And my husband and I, again, we have an expression. I don't want to be a billionaire in terms of dollars and assets and net worth. I have no interest in that. But being a time billionaire, oh yeah, that's of great interest to me.
Well, I'd like to be a time billionaire too. It sounds like something I'd really, really love.
It's just a, you pick and choose.
We do pick and choose.
Yep.
And I think a lot of things you said today are really life-changing for a lot of people. I think we don't ever think about ourselves and how we're emotionally feeling and taking care of that before we try to tackle some of these huge things that happen in our lives. If it be, like you said, financial debt, physical ailments, natural disasters, you name it, you need to really have some self-care there and take care of yourself so that you can go and overcome this huge hurdle that's in your life. And then don't be afraid to ask people for help. Get the experts out there. Use your network and do what you need to do to be able to overcome whatever that challenge is. And again, Lynette, thank you so much for coming on. And if anyone hasn't gone out and got the book, go out and get it. It's called Bounce Back. And I know that's the book she's talking about right now, but she does have a lot of other books. They are all amazing. And I would suggest you to read them and to go to her site. Lynette, is it moneycoach.com or?
It's askthemoneycoach.com. And then my personal site also is LynetteCalfanicox.com. Thank you for that.
So make sure to go there, check her out. She will help you. And she's an expert. If you are in debt, hey, she's one of those experts you can reach out to and ask for help. And I want to remind all of you to do what I always tell you to do, and that is to live richer.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Before you go, we'd love for you to subscribe to our show to catch all of our updates. Also, we want to hear from you. What are your burning questions about money and how to live your best life? Reach us at liverichapod@gobankingrates.com.